And good afternoon, folks. My name's Craig, and this is the Over the Fence show here on Raglan Community Radio 98.1 FM and on Free FM 89.0 coming out of Hamilton throughout the Waikato. Hope you guys are having a lovely day, wherever you may be. It's another beautiful day here in Whangaroa. And so soon in the show, we're going to be going through the headlines from the primary sector, and then we'll have a look at the weather. We'll have a look at some gardening to-dos a bit later on, and all going well, we're going to be talking to Dave Clee from Fish and Game New Zealand a bit later in the show. While I get the headlines organised, I'm going to play for you, being New Zealand Music Month, I'm going to play all New Zealand music this week, and I'm going to start the show with A Thing Well Made by the Mutton Birds.
She's wearing her Don't Talk To Me face, and she makes the kids lunches. I oblige and quietly shut the front door as I leave. I drive into town before the fog lifts. I sell sporting goods, 'cause I've got a shop not far from Cathedral Square. I like to open up early so fellas can come in on their way to work and daydream around the rods and reels while their breakfast's still warm inside. Everything's from overseas. You won't find a better selection. Look at the way this gun fits the crook of your arm. To make a thing like that, you need to know shut right out.
There with A Thing Well Made. Now it's time for the rural headlines here on the Over the Fence show. And another 11 reports of the Fall Army pest being discovered have been lodged with Biosecurity New Zealand since its initial discovery about a month ago in Tauranga. Reports are in of the pest now being found in the Waikato, Taranaki, South Auckland and Gisborne. Biosecurity New Zealand Readiness and Response Director John Walsh said they had received 96 reports to Biosecurity New Zealand's Pest and Disease Hotline in all. And yes, it was about a month ago when it was first discovered, I remember reading out, and then it was only a couple of weeks ago there were three cases in the Waikato only. So it's pretty far now. And Biosecurity New Zealand's Pest and Disease Hotline number is 0800 80 99 66. Or you can report it on the internet via Find a Pest. Yes, and that everybody's hoping that if winter ever actually arrives, it'll be too cold for them to breed and might kill them out, but we shall see. And a shortage of New Zealand-grown wheat has led flour company Edmunds to source stock from overseas. Heavy rains in February ruined crops around the country, particularly in the South Island, forcing Edmunds to source its wheat from Australia. Edmunds said their products will carry made from Australian wheat under the best before code of the products made from, of course, Australian wheat. And the Overseas Investment Office has approved the sale of another six farms for conversion to forestry under the Special Forestry Test. The Special Forestry Test was introduced in 2018 to encourage more tree planting, but farming groups and environmental groups have raised alarm at the rate of farms being sold to overseas interests. The government's currently reviewing the test, but sales are still continuing as they do that. The government is asking for feedback on whether pig farrowing crates should be banned or further limited in the use, one of the two options. Farrowing crates keep sows in a confined spot during the final months of their pregnancy and while they are suckling piglets. A High Court ruling in 2020 made the use unlawful, prompting the government to phase out their use over a five-year period. Chief Executive of New Zealand Pork, Brent Cleese, said the changes would result in the death of 60,000 piglets every year, and the crates were the maternity wards for sows and piglets and were specifically designed and proven to significantly reduce the main causes of piglet deaths, such as starvation, hypothermia, and being accidentally crushed by the sow. Yeah, interesting one, that one. I can see kind of both sides of it, but yes, we'll follow that one with interest. A new research out of the University of Helsinki has found substituting animal products for insect protein could reduce global warming. The research found swapping out regular proteins like chicken and red meat with insects and microproitin, which is a naturally occurring fungus, humans could potentially reduce global warming potential and water use by over 80%. Auckland University PhD candidate Neil Burrell, who researches the use of insects as food, said they're actually really delicious. I've tried over 20 species of insects and all have a different flavour and taste and characteristics. He adds there's between 1,500 and 2,000 species of insects eaten around the world. And Waikato farmers are becoming increasingly worried as the dry conditions continue through autumn. Neil Badeup, who we've had on the show a couple of times, Chair of Rural Support and the Waikato Primary Industries Adverse Event Cluster, said it's been dry since Christmas pretty much and farmers have had no reprieve. He's urging farmers to monitor their situations very closely and be proactive rather than reactive. And that's good advice. So, and if you want to get a hold of Rural Support, the number is, of course, 0800 787 254. So that's Rural Support, 0800 787 254. And land use and productivity changes in the red meat sector mean absolute emissions have declined by 30% and emissions per unit of product by 40% since 1990. Derek Moot from Lincoln University has found that, And he said the legume use was one important factor in the emissions being dropped by 30% as livestock that ate legumes produce much less methane and legumes leave nitrogen in the soil for other plants to use and also reduce nitrogen leaching in this way. So that's a good news story to finish up there. And we'll come back soon with the weather. But in the meantime, here goes The Sneaky Feelings, Your Secret Safe with me.
now, we'll need 5 minutes now. I'll go into the next room and I'll work this out somehow. A little bit of doubt crept up on me when we were kissing, so I went and checked the safe. That's when I found the jewels were missing. Still, I was raised a holy kid to love my enemy. And I'm not telling what you did, your secret safe. Secret safe with me. Now don't go breaking down on me. Don't say you've lost your touch. I've watched you for a long time and you worry far too much. I've seen you being out of sorts. I've seen you be a bore. I've seen you losing half your friends. What did you want so many for? You made me laugh, you guilty jerk. You think you can't be understood. You think your heart's just made of wood.
The Sneakies there with the Secret Safe with me. It's weather time now here on the Over the Fence show. There's not too much really happening again. A high pressure system continues to lie over New Zealand today with the highs centre out to the east. Mainly settled weather nationwide with some areas of morning fog with a few showers for areas north of Auckland. Rain, well, west coast down south may get some rain on Sunday. As the front moves through, while other regions, maybe the Waikato, might get some rain or showers on Monday as the airflow tilts more to the south. The Waikato, partly cloudy with a few showers north of Tauranga today. Partly cloudy pretty much and fine till Sunday. And there's an 80% chance of about 9.2 millimetres on Monday with maybe showers Tuesday, and that's the only kind of rain. But they said that about, I think, today or tomorrow, last week, and it hasn't kind of eventuated, unfortunately, because yes, it's very dusty for May, isn't it? Could be March. So yes, maybe Monday, possibly Tuesday, and then fine again a week today, next Wednesday. The daytime temperature is going to range between 19 and 21 degrees Celsius, and nighttime temperatures are around about between 9 and 12 degrees Celsius. And the winds are easterly today and tomorrow, southerly Friday, nor'easterly Saturday, northerly Sundays, nor'west Monday. And they move more south to south-southeast into early next week. Humidity today is somewhere between 89 and 93%. The sun rose this morning at 7:03 and will set this evening at 5:30. The length of visible light is 11 hours 22 minutes and the actual day length is 10 hours 27 minutes. Tomorrow will be 1 minute and 58 seconds shorter than today. So, yes, the day's getting shorter, but it was just last week. Yeah, the last sort of few months it's been 2 minutes something, but now it's like 1 minute and 58 seconds shorter. So, yeah, we're heading to the equinox, obviously. And the moon, ladies and gentlemen, is a waxing crescent, somewhere between 9 and 14% illuminated. And rose this morning at 10:04 and will set at 7:29 p.m. this evening. So, yet again, for another week, it's pretty much what you see is what you're going to get out the window today, folks, which isn't good if you're trying to grow grass. But what can you do about it? Now I'm going to play Rocky Mountain by Barissa Creating Cake, and we'll be back with some gardening to-dos following that.
Is there a train to the Rocky Mountain? Is there a place where we can dance? I want a tent to sell some buttons. I want a sound man to make a sound so loud. I'm gonna cut my nails before
Teresa Creating Cake there with Rocky Mountain. Hope you enjoyed that one. And gardening time now on the Over the Fence show. And if you're gardening by the moon, ladies and gentlemen, today till Sunday, continue planting your brassicas and protect them from the white butterflies with netting. And yes, there's still plenty of butterflies and flies and such things around due to the warm weather, aren't there? It's certainly unseasonable. Also plant out Asian greens like your pak choi, mizuna, and a tatsoi. And for Monday, sow or plant your broad beans and plant out new strawberry plants into well-composted beds. And you can plant in May the following things. Alyssum, apples, blackberries, blueberries, bok choy, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, calendula, carrots, cauliflower, cyclamen, daffodil, daisy, delphinium, dianthus, feijoas, garlic, hyacinth, kale, leeks, lemons, lettuce, limes, mandarins, mesclun, onions, caught myself out there, didn't I? Oranges, parsley, peas, pears, poppy, radish, raspberries, rhubarb, rocket, silver beet, snapdragon, spinach, strawberries, sweet pea, and tulip. So all these things you can carry on with in the garden, ladies and gentlemen. Now it's time for Street Chant. Less chat, more sewing.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Over the Fence show. That was Street Chant with their song Less Chat, More Sewing. I'm going to play for you now Lawrence Arabia song called The 03, and All Going Well. When we come back, we'll be with today's guest, Dave Clee from Fish and Game New Zealand. And that was Lawrence Arabia off his album The Sparrow, a song called 03. And now we're joined today, All Going Well, by our guest here on the Over the Fence show on Raglan Community Radio 98.1 and Free FM 89.0 throughout the Waikato, Dave Clee from Fish and Game. Can you hear me all right, Dave?
Yeah, mate, I can hear you just fine.
Fantastic, all right. Incident free, switch from the phone to on air, that's always good. And how are you today, Dave?
Yeah, mate, I'm good, thank you. Yeah, I'm loving the sunny weather, although I would love a bit of rain and wind as well to recharge some wetlands and make it a bit better for our hunters, but as many rain dances as I've been doing, it doesn't seem to be working, mate, so it is what it is.
You were just saying you're looking at a wetland that's usually a good refuge for ducks and things that dry as a bone.
dry as a bone. It's got cracks in it. It looks like something out of the Australian outback at the moment, to be fair. So, yeah, I guess, you know, the 3 years of below average rainfall and, you know, two nasty droughts in a row, and, you know, it's had a, you know, it's obviously had a detrimental impact on our rural sector, but also similarly it's had a detrimental impact on our ducks and our duck population.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. I guess firstly, you were on about this time last year, Dave, but I guess we weren't going to Free FM then, so maybe just tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and how you got into the fishing game and such things.
Yeah, so I've been here for a little while now, actually 12 years or so, and yes, I, my background's freshwater ecology. Did my master's on the Rotorua Lakes, looking at sort of food wet dynamics within those lake systems down there. And, yeah, spent a bit of time overseas, over in Canada and Alaska and tricking around, and did a bit of work down in a fisheries team down in Turangi on the trout down there. And, yeah, settled up here in the end and live out at Waitatuna Valley out towards Raglan there, not too far from your neck of the woods.
Yep.
And, yeah, so passionate about my hunting and my fishing, love doing it recreationally, love doing it for work. And yeah, a big part of my job now, I guess, is doing all the species monitoring at Fish and Game in the Auckland Waikato here, and also doing a lot of restoration activities of lakes, wetlands, etc. Amongst other things, obviously on opening weekend we'll be out and about doing a bit of compliance work too, just making sure people are sticking to the rules. So yeah, if you see us around, hopefully give us a wave rather than any other digits, and yeah, come and have a chat.
Yeah, that's why. Man, is your area Auckland and Waikato? That's massive.
Yeah, mate, our region goes from Warkworth down to National Park.
Far out.
So yeah, she's a bit of a drive around to get to see it all.
And how many guys work that area?
Four of us.
Gee whiz.
Well, yeah, there's, and that one of those positions is an RMA position, so not really field based. So yeah, we're a small outfit. I mean, for those who don't know, so Fish and Game is fully licensed, payer funded. So the only way we make money is through selling game bird licenses and fishing licenses. And I do rely heavily on getting external grants from some of our funders to do all the, you know, wetland restoration and that kind of stuff. But yeah, we're not government subsidised, which is a general misconception, is that we're somehow, you know, leverage off the taxpayer, but that's not the case at all. It's a purely user-saves system that we operate under.
And how many users would you have in your area, would you guess?
Well, so how many people?
Yeah, how many people would be part of? Well,
in the Auckland Waikato region, it's just four of us staff and our manager and an office person. So,
how many, I don't know, what members or what have you, by licenses?
Oh, right.
And that,
so we've got about 7,000 license holders in total.
Yeah.
That's just on the game bird side. Fisheries, it's about 2,500, something like that.
All right.
Season. Yeah. So about 10,000 license holders in our region all up.
Mm.
Obviously, landowners, and this might be quite a good point to make too, landowners on their own private land do not need a license to hunt game birds. So yeah, so there's an exemption there. So we don't actually know exactly how many people partake, like on opening weekend. But yeah, there's probably a good couple of thousand of them, I'd imagine, as well, that are hunting basically on landowner privileges.
Yeah, and when you say fish, is it basically just trout or some other species also?
Yeah, there's a few other species in the mix too, mate. So we've got tench, and the Auckland Waikato rudd are considered a sports fish as well. Obviously salmon down the South Island. So, but yeah, it's primarily trout is the main one. Perch is another one that is also falls under the sports fish category.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, you know, we're solely game birds and sports, freshwater sports fish. So nothing to do, obviously, with the oceanic species, although salmon do have time in both ocean and freshwater.
Yeah. Have you guys got anything to do with, I guess, trying to knock down the koi carp numbers or anything like that? Or is that kind of out of your kind of thing?
Well, look, they're not a sports fish, but we certainly manage them in our wetlands. So, you know, the wetlands that I've been designing and building and constructing and so on, we tend to use water control and manipulation to manage koi numbers. And we've also put in fish traps and so on to try and, or fish barriers to try and keep them out of wetlands or to catch them. And obviously my colleague, I don't know if you know, Adam Daniel slash Carpy.
Carpy, yes. No, he's been on the show a couple of times.
Yeah, exactly. So he's obviously, his background is in migratory, monitoring the migration of Koikapa and the Waikato River. So although he's now working for us and doing the trout side of it, he's obviously got a lot of knowledge when it comes to carp. So, yeah, we'd like to think that we do know a bit about carp and trying to manage them, obviously, and trying to mitigate the impacts, especially in the systems that we control and manage.
Yeah, look, yeah, it's always been frustrating for me because I know there's been a couple of attempts to turn carp into fertiliser, to put them to some good use, but, yeah, it just kind of died. I think it was a council thing, and it just kind of died off. I think Bruno, one of the locals here, was sort of managing that project, and just nothing's happened with it, which is, yeah, it just seems such a... Because it's a resource, right? And there's plenty of them, so, and they make good fertiliser, so I just don't know why that's not kind of funded well.
Yeah, look, I mean, that is frustrating. Like, I know Bruno, and he's a passionate man, and he's got some awesome ideas, and why that hasn't been received better funding through council, I don't know either. I mean, essentially, one of the issues, I guess, with making something like Koikapa resource is that potentially down the track, if you build a whole industry around it, because Koikapa are inherently difficult to manage using any traditional means or mechanisms. So really the breakthrough will be if some of the new technologies like gene drive technology, for example, like the Daughterless Carp program or the Koi Herpes virus, which you're investing in over in Australia, if something like that came through, which would actually help eradicate them entirely, which is obviously the aim. Problem is, mate, if you build a whole industry around it and people start making a whole lot of money off it, then is there going to be still the will to get rid of them?
There is that aspect
to it, is that you need to make sure that the overriding goal is not management, i.e., when you start making industry, people start talking about wanting to manage it as a resource. To my mind, the overriding goal should be to eradicate. And so as long as that's the push and that's the drive, then we're all for it.
Yeah. Hey, and what are these technologies? How do they kind of work, that you're talking about?
So gene drive technology basically means that you can genetically modify organisms that they either won't be able to reproduce, or let's say the daughterless koi program is that basically you won't be able to create or you'll be able to genetically modify them so that they'll only produce males.
Right.
So, and obviously females are the ones that lay the eggs. So if you get rid of all the females out of a population, then you'll basically drive that population to extinction.
Right.
There's that, or the Koi Herpes virus, which is obviously going to be a viral infection that will go through the koi population and we'll be able to knock the numbers back, similar to what the Khaleesi virus, or the idea behind the Khaleesi virus was for rabbits. So something like that, which would actually have a major impact. So, yeah, to put it in perspective, all the trials that have been done to reduce biomass by either netting or putting traps in and so on really hasn't been effective at either reducing the biomass, but even when the biomass has been reduced, it hasn't actually improved water quality much in those catchments. And look, I mean, again, I think koi carp need to be eradicated. I think that's a really good aim, but we also shouldn't kid ourselves to think that if we got rid of koi carp, we'd magically solve all of our other issues with water quality either. They're definitely detrimental, but there's also plenty of waterways that are highly degraded that don't have any koi in them at all. So I guess we need to be realistic about what outcomes we'll achieve by just getting rid of koi. They're definitely not, it's not a silver bullet solution saying let's get rid of koi and everything will be fine with water quality. That's definitely not the case either.
Yeah, and I guess that's where you spend a lot of your working time, just cruising around looking at wetlands and, evaluating stream quality and such things, Dave?
I'm definitely more focused on the game bird side of it. So, yeah, definitely more wetlands and lakes. Unfortunately, with these hot, dry summers, we have some pretty major issues in some of our freshwater ecosystems. Like this summer, obviously, some bad botulism outbreaks again, there's someone that hit the news of it was Lake Naroto, where basically our lakes are so degraded now, they're hyper-eutrophic with these massive algal blooms, and then when they become stratified, they basically all the oxygen gets used in them.
And
when all the oxygen is used, you get these big fish kills. And then following on from the fish kills, you get botulism outbreaks. So it's sort of this vicious cycle that occurs in some of our systems. And, yeah, it's not... Yeah, so it's sounds like a fun job, but when you go spend 3 weeks picking up dead stuff out of lakes, it's got its ups and downs, mate.
It's not
all glamorous.
Nah, no doubt. I mean, you know, with these, you know, temperatures, obviously one factor, I guess. Nitrogen, you know, runoff and what have you, would be another one. What other factors are involved in that kind of thing?
Yeah, so like I say, so it's sort of a cascade of events. So that with the lakes being hypereutrophic, they're super saturated with both nitrogen and phosphorus in a lot of instances. That leads to algal growth, and then as those that algae, so you get these big cyanobacterial blooms, which in themselves are quite toxic, and so we had massive ones down there, and then that leads to that cascade of effects that I described. So botulism is which is the end result, which kills all the waterfowl. It's a bacteria that lives in right around the region, basically in soils, but it needs the right climatic conditions to become available. And one of those things it needs is a protein substrate. So you think about it, you get a low DO event, so all your fish start dying, and this happens both within lakes, but more commonly in places like wastewater treatment plants, which are sort of your perfect environment for anoxia. Then you have that protein source, and then, you know, 2-3 weeks later, you get the botulism outbreaks, which kills your birds. So it's sort of a vicious cycle that occurs. And, temperature, hot, dry summers, water drawdown is part of that whole cycle. And I guess the thing is, moving forward, unfortunately, it looks like these type of hot, dry summers are going to be a more common and reoccurring theme. So I guess we've got to get our head around that and start looking at ways we can better manage our freshwater ecosystems to try and stop these things from occurring. And if they do occur, I guess have the right processes in place to manage them so that we don't get these massive die-offs.
And how are the lake levels like? Is Lake Taupo lost a bit of water, or a bit lower than usual, or how's that?
Mate, Lake Taupo is outside of our region. I'm not 100% sure. The river's definitely low. If you're going out shooting on the river on opening weekend, just check your areas where you're going, because there's a lot of sandbars and stuff that are just below water level now. I'd hate for anyone to flip their boat or anything, so just take it easy.
Might be a few high and dry mimos, you reckon, eh?
Oh, mate, there's going to be, like, the swamps almost completely dry in most instances, so there aren't many birds living in them. But some guys will shoot well. The guys that have got good water in their ponds or are shooting on big lakes, we've had a much better breeding season this year than the last two, so there should be a few more birds available.
Well, that's good.
But I think it'll be really much a case of the haves and the have-nots this year. The guys that are shooting somewhere where the birds are feeding, and there's limited food available because all the swamps are dry. There's nowhere really for the birds to feed, so a lot of the birds will just be chasing, you know, recently cut maize, or, you know, farmers that are feeding out maize silage, that kind of stuff. So if you're shooting somewhere where there's a good ready food source nearby and you've got good water in your pond, then you should do fine. But for those poor buggers that have got, you know, a quarter of an inch of water in their pond in a swamp somewhere, it might be a different story. So
it might be well out of luck.
It's and, you know, again, this is sort of the theme at the moment. You know, our big wetlands like Whangamarino or Kapua Tai and places like that are just are just way below. And even Lake Waikare is, you know, which is one of our biggest lake, well, the biggest lake in our region, it's 300 millimetres below its minimum operating level at the moment.
Far out.
Everything's way down on where it should be. And as the farmers out there will know, it's sort of a green drought right now, and, you know, there isn't much grass growing either.
That's for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty tough for everyone, including the ducks.
And so the lack of water, that's probably going to have a knock-on effect on the duck population to some level, I guess, isn't it, Dave?
Yep, for sure. Yeah, so we know that, and particularly having a good number of high-quality seasonally flooded wetlands during the breeding season is really important for our duck population. So in years when we haven't got any flooding, seasonally flooded wetlands, we just have a really limited amount of breeding areas. You know, because most of our larger water bodies, like our large lakes, are so degraded now, they really don't provide an adequate resource anymore for our birds during the breeding season. So, for example, most of them haven't got a very good invertebrate, so it hasn't got the little bugs and stuff in it, which the ducklings need. They need a really high protein diet. So if you don't have that anywhere, then your ducklings aren't going to survive. And so, again, we need rain at the right time of year to create these seasonally flooded wetlands to give our birds a chance to reproduce and survive. And, yeah, so the last 2 years our population's nosedived and been really poor. So, yep, droughts affect ducks. As you can imagine, waterfowl need water, and if we don't have water, then, it's really hard on them as well.
Gee whiz, it sounds, and a few little things cascading all together to, affecting many species. And I guess, what's the catch rate anyway, if you do happen to come across some ducks, Dave?
Right, so the bag limits, you mean, this year?
Yeah, the bag limits, yeah.
Yeah, so eight dabbling ducks per hunter per day.
Yep.
You can shoot another 10 parries on top of your 8 mallard and greys and shoveler. And then obviously you've got separate limits for black swan and so on as well, another 2 of those. Then you got your 3 pheasants, cock pheasants as well, which you can shoot, 10 pukekos. So, what I encourage people to do if they're not familiar with the regs, just pick up a reg booklet. They come free with the license, or you can look at it online and check it out. Mm. Just make sure you know what you can shoot in the area that you're hunting.
I know Canadian geese are a big problem, especially around out in the coastal kind of areas, in the harbour here and Aotea and places like that. I mean, I guess, how did they come to be? Well, what's their history in New Zealand, I guess? Do you know any of that kind of stuff, Dave?
Yeah, so look, I mean, initially they were released as a game bird, and
that would have been how long ago?
I don't know a long time ago. I don't know the exact date.
Like ages ago.
Yeah. And they subsequently did. Obviously, there's localized populations that subsequently increased. And then I guess in most recent years. So in the Auckland Waikato, we've been doing trend counts since 1983 on all our geese, swan, and paradise shelter.
Yeah.
And the numbers sort of increased, but then we had some big culls. I think the last big one was in 2007. It was before my time, it was just before I started.
Yeah.
And we knocked the populations back quite significantly during those two big culls that we had. So that involved a whole lot of hunters out and about, aerial, activities. So we had planes and helicopters and so on up, hazing the birds. So large numbers did get shot. But then there's quite a bit of lobbying. I guess people weren't satisfied with how fishing game were managing geese, and in 2011 they were removed as a game bird, and so since then they've been on Schedule 5, which is basically unprotected. So there's no more bag limits, there's no more season length, you can basically shoot them anytime, providing you have landowner permission, obviously, anywhere, and by any means. So unfortunately, I don't think it's really worked very well. At the time, I guess it was viewed as a big victory in terms of people being able to manage geese, but I think what's been absent is any real strategy around geese since then.
Right,
So, I mean, the numbers... In 2011, we had about... In our annual trend counts, we had about 2,200 geese that we counted. By 2021... we had about close to 10,500.
Gee whiz.
So, they've gone up exponentially. And it shouldn't be surprising, to be honest. I mean, you take a highly adaptable species. I don't know if you've hunted geese, but they are difficult to hunt. They're pretty smart. They get old. They get wily. And you remove any form of formal management and kind of just leave it up to individuals to, shoot the odd one here and there. I mean... this was the only logical outcome that was ever going to occur, I think.
Right.
It'd be like saying, just because you make possums a pest, right, if you took all the management away from possums and no one actually coordinating anything, like you removed EPRO and just said, right, everybody manage possums, they're a pest now, go for it. I don't really think you'd get the population under control, So I just think it was poorly thought through. I mean... at the time, especially Fed Farmers lobbied really hard, and if you look at the PR that was put out at the time, they said that they would be looking to step up and manage geese or coordinate management of geese. That's it. I know, look, there's been local people. I mean, I still try to participate in culls and help out where I can, but we receive zero budget, zero funding now to manage geese. So,
yeah, it's interesting. It appears to be like a, you know, no one's kind of doing anything, the regional council, the government level. Like, it's just nothing's kind of happening, no, you know?
Yeah. Look, I mean, hey, look, maybe Fishing Game went managing them perfectly. Okay, that's fine. But to just remove all forms of management and not have anyone responsible for them is just crazy.
Yeah, it's unsurprising they're a problem now, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And now, I mean, now there's talk about people saying, oh, Fishing Game should manage them again. I'm like, well, hang on a minute. The numbers have basically increased, you know, fivefold. Okay, like, if we need to start culling them and so on and doing it properly, I mean, there's ways you can reduce goose populations, but you need to do it properly and coherently. And there's a method, and it doesn't involve, you know, people rolling down the back paddock with a 303 and taking the odd pot shot at them. So again, that would need to, and it would take a bit of money now and finances to actually get the population back to manageable levels, because they have exploded now to the extent they have. So
yeah,
so it's not an easy one, mate. The geese, I agree that in some places, you know, they need to, they probably do need to be reduced in numbers. And I know there are really, you know, goose hunters out there that are still, I mean, they're an awesome bird to hunt when you do it, when you get it all right. There's nothing like having, you know, like, just geese just decoying into you, you know, and there are guys out there shooting 200-300 birds a day. And then, you know, there's the guys around Raglan Harbour. I know that cull they had earlier in the year that was organised, so some landowners got together and finally said, enough, we're going to coordinate this, we're going to, you know, pay for a chopper, we're going to do the stuff and do it properly. And I know they got a good hit on some of the geese, and some of the guys there shot over 200 birds in that,
right,
that cull.
Right.
So, yeah, so look, you can do it. It's just it takes time, effort, and money. Yeah. And so someone's got to put their time, effort, and money into it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, kind of simple as that, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's great. Great to chat and catch up, Dave. I mean, like, you know, would any advice for people who might be going out this weekend, which of course is opening weekend for the Ducks, what would you say to potential punters?
Yeah, look, be safe out there. You know, check your water levels if you're taking a boat anywhere. You know, because yeah, there will be a few potential, or maybe take it to be a prop with you as well, because there's going to be a few things sticking out of water that normally wouldn't be sticking out of water just because the levels are so low. And yeah, look, you know, if you do bum into us, or like, we've got a few honorary rangers that roll around as well, just checking licenses and so on. Hey, we're not there to ruin anyone's day, and the honorary guys are there. They're purely voluntary. So, you know, feel free to give me a bit of flack if you see me, but maybe just, you know, be easy on the honorary. They're just out there because they're passionate guys, and they love the sport, and they just want to make sure everyone's abiding by the rules. Make sure you read your regs beforehand, know what the rules are. If you've got any questions, feel free to give me a call at the office, you know.
Yeah,
and I'll run you through it, and have a real good one. Enjoy it. Enjoy your time with friends and family, and hope for some rain later in the season so we can get a bit more water around.
That's the one.
Also, look, if there's any landowners out there listening that are keen to maybe do a bit of wetland restoration work, it's a big part of my job is working with keen farmers who want to restore habitat. So again, feel free to give me a shout, and we'll catch up and see what we can do.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Dave. And is it too late to get a license now, or is it easy done straight away online?
Online, mate. Just go for it.
Like Fishing Game, tap it up.
Yeah. Just jump on there, get yourself a license. Hey, and if you've never been duck shooting before and you want to give it a go for the first time, there is this thing that we've got on called Take a Mate Hunting. So if you're going hunting and you got a mate who's never been out, you just pay the Game Bird Habitat Trust stamp, which is $4 this year, I think, and that will allow you to take someone new out hunting for the first time for only $4.
Cool.
So that's another initiative we've got just for people that maybe want to give it a whirl but aren't quite willing to commit, yeah, the money that costs to buy a full season license, so you can go on opening weekend and have a go and see if it's for you.
It's a great initiative, yes.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks very much for coming on the show again, Dave, and we might see you around maybe even this weekend, possibly.
Yeah, possibly, mate. We'll be kicking around. So, if anyone's, like I say, if anyone's got any questions, they can give me a call, just give Auckland Waikato Fishing Game a call at the office after speak to Dave. Yeah. And
That's about
trying to help them out.
Yeah, about the licenses and wetland restoration. So, yep, you can do plenty of things through Fish and Game.
Yep, no worries.
Hey, yeah, thanks again, Matt. Appreciate it, and yeah, take care. We'll see you around.
Okay, mate. Cool.
Cheers.
Cheers for the chat.
Yeah.
See ya.
Thanks, Matt. See ya. Dave Clee there from Fish and Game. So, yes, if you are interested in going duck shooting, if you do have any water on your place, which is probably unlikely, yeah, get a hold of Fish and Game, get your license, and also if you've got a wetland you want to restore, also get a hold of Dave Clee and the team there at Fish and Game. I think we're going to go out with a song. As a matter of fact, time's just about up. Here's the Gordons, Coal Miner Song. Hope you enjoy this as you get going into the afternoon. Take care, everybody. Ka kite anō, and we'll catch you again next week.
$15,000 more gold.